Welcome to Happy Hour with lawyer and TV personality Jonna Spilbor and author and inspirational speaker Carol Pesci. Happy Hour comes your way every Sunday morning at this time with life advice, real conversations, and awesome interviews with self-help heavy hitters, best-selling authors, celebrities, and more. Would you like to maybe live better, stress less, and laugh more? Then you've come to the right place.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Happy Hour, another edition of Happy Hour here with Jonna Spilbor and Carol Pesci. I am Frankenberry, and we have returned for another show, and we have Jonna, who now, for our audience, you may not know this, but every week, Jonna changes her alias on Zoom. Now, I'll let Carol. Carol, give us some of the aliases that she's used so far.
Well, she was, what was it, Domino's Pizza? What were you? No.
Oh, no, the competition to Domino's, Carol. Please.
Little Caesars.
Yeah, that's right. You were a character from Sex Little in the Caesar. City.
Yes. I was also Leather Tuscadero.
Yep, that you were.
That's right.
That you were. And then last week you were Glenda the Good Witch. So you decided to go a complete 180 from the Leather Tuscadero. And this year, apparently, this week, apparently, you are Alistair Mad-Eye Moody.
That is correct.
From Harry Potter, for if there's one other person out there besides Jonna who hasn't watched the movies. It was for your benefit.
Yeah.
I have not seen one. Yes, I had to pick. Okay, so, well, first of all, I was not even planning this to be a topic of discussion. I have a whole other topic of discussion that I want to talk to yous twos about. But what happened this morning is, and this is not the first time, did you ever see those, when you're watching TV and you see those commercials for the people who have Graves' disease and their eyes bulge and hurt and get red?
Yes.
And they're, okay.
No.
I knew all somebody right. would well, have
there's,
that, yeah.
There's, well, I don't have Graves' disease, but I've seen the commercials enough so that I have psychosomatically given myself red eye, bulging eye disease, but only on one eye. And so it comes and it goes. So what happens is, like, I don't have Graves' disease. I don't know what causes it, but every once in a while, one of my eyes will feel like it's got sandpaper in it and it hurts like a bitch and it tears up and all my mascara comes off. And that makes me mad. And then it makes me feel like somebody's punching me in the eye. And then there's nothing I can do about it except wait it out. And then it goes away. And that happened this morning. So I'm like, geez, Louise, I don't know. It just comes and it goes. So it's probably a what? Yes, a tumor. But I have not.
A what?
Since I have not verified it. And perhaps maybe it's connected to my makeup. I don't know. But it hurt so bad this morning that when I was deciding who I wanted to be when we recorded our show today, I did a little Googling first. I did famous pirates with eye patches. I couldn't really find anybody that anyone would know. And then I did famous people with eye patches. And I came up with, of course, Left Eye Lisa Lopez, but she's dead. I didn't want to go there. So I landed on Alistair Mad-Eye Moody from the Harry Potter films because I figured you two would know of him.
Well, the only issue I have, though, Jonna, is you're kind of killing the image because of the fact that you're not wearing an eye patch. I want to see a picture of you wearing the eye patch.
Oh, she's going to create that before the show is over.
I ain't got no eye patch. I suppose I could fashion an eye patch out of a thong. I mean, who hasn't done that? You know,
that was often a Saturday night for me in college. So, yeah, no, I understand.
So, so I picked this Alistair character. I don't know much about him, except that obviously he wore an eye patch. And that's all I know.
Well, the other thing is, though, Jonna, Carol mentioned, because she knows the Harry Potter better than I do, that Alistair also had a limp. So the question I have is, now that we're telling you that, how does your leg feel?
Exactly. Yeah, here we go. Tune in next week.
Son of a beat. Yeah, next week when I'm peg-legged.
so what I'm going to do now, Jonna, is I'm going to go to WebMD and I'm going to search out legs that hurt and I'm going to send you the link. You'll be afraid you're going to be dead in a week
and overweight and partially bald.
That's right. And once you get that peg leg and the eye patch, you're going to be talking like a pirate in no time.
Yeah, I already am. So yeah, so that's my dilemma. That is my dilemma this morning.
Is your eye feeling better than this morning?
Yes, it is.
Does it always happen to the same eye?
Yes, it always happens to the same eye. Isn't that weird? Yeah, I know. That's what I said. Probably tumor. It's all right. But you know, I've lived a good life. I mean, what can I say?
That is a good point. You've had a good run.
I don't know. I should go to an eye doctor because I actually do need, real glasses. I've been using these dime store readers forever, but I'm sure that I've, graduated from these. It just haven't gone. Anywho.
Well, eye doctor is easy, by the way, Jonna. That's one you should definitely go to. It's the dentist that I avoid, but the eye doctor, that's an easy appointment.
You know, I suppose if we had to rank doctors in, in terms of best to worst, as far as like the fear factor and the pain factor. Okay, so the best one where you really never have any pain or fear, I suppose, might be like the eye doctor. And then regular like urgent care doctor, and then gyno, and then dentist, right?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I might rate my gynecologist, maybe number two as opposed to number three. But I can go with you on that.
Yeah.
For most people, are going to be not loving us right now. I know everybody doesn't like it. I mean, listen, I have a very good dentist. I never enjoy going ever, for a cleaning.
Right, right. And then, I might have to rank the regular doctor a little different on occasion, only when it comes to the physical, because there are certain things, there's certain things as a guy that the doc has to check as part of your physical. So
Wait a minute. John has a device he bought on Amazon.
I can be your doctor.
That's right. We don't have to do this the usual way, Steve. We can check your prostate with this thing that Jonna got online at 3 o'clock in the morning when she was drunk.
Nice. Carol, great idea.
That would be fun at a party, huh?
No. Jonna, does the device have a Bluetooth capability that you can broadcast it to a large screen TV?
Oh my God, it does!
You could sell tickets for that and everything.
And everything.
Frankenberry, your life just got better.
It certainly did, if not a little bit more uncomfortable at the same time.
Oh, and I got Garth Brooks' Friends in Low Places playing in the background, too. Oh, boy.
Oh, don't worry, Frankenberry, because the wand is really, really skinny. You won't feel a thing.
Of course I won't. And just the fact that you called it a wand has got me running. I never imagined that Glenda the Good Witch had that as a wand.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, Carol, that was brilliant. Another brilliant Carol idea.
Thank you. It's too early for this nonsense.
Yeah, I know. Right? So what I wanted to talk about today was something that's just kind of like ironic that happened. And I wanted to find out from you guys if you have similar issues. So really what I wanted to say is I was pet peeves. I feel like lately either I have more of them than I ever did before, or the ones I have are just gaining strength. And it was funny because I don't know, Frankenberry, you probably never listened to him, but I do. And Carol does too. There's a guy named Jeff Lewis. He used to be the star of Flipping Out on, HGTV or Bravo, one of those TV networks. And he now has a radio show. So I sometimes tune into his radio show in the evening because it's pretty funny. And he is kind of like the male version of me in many ways, given his like short fuse.
Okay.
So anyway, this was the irony of it. I'm in the car the other day and I'm listening to Jeff Lewis live on the radio, and he is talking about a pet peeve, and his pet peeve was he went to a hotel bar and there was a lounge singer, which sidebar, I love lounge singers. He went to a hotel bar. He was only going to be there for one drink. So he went up to the lounge singer and he paid her $50 and requested a Taylor Swift song. the lounge singer took the $50, but instead of playing Taylor Swift, she went on a 35-minute break. So now he was like, I just paid her $50. Now I got to sit in a hotel bar and wait for my song to come on in order to get my money's worth. And he was talking how that was a pet peeve. Well, the irony was, while he's talking about his pet peeve, I had a pet peeve happening in real life at the same time. And I was like, wow, this is a double whammy pet peeve moment. Because as I'm driving, the person next to me, I was on like a 3-lane highway. The person next to me was driving at the exact same rate of speed as me.
I knew you were going to say that.
And that was going to be my question. Like, am I the only one that irritates? Because it happens a lot, whether you're on the Taconic or the arterial, where there's multi-lanes. There never should be anybody to your left or to your right driving like a pace car with you for a number of reasons. Number one, it's annoying. Number two, if you are trying to get my attention, there's no reason for you to be doing it that way unless there is like a small infant child hanging by a diaper from my trunk. And three, it's kind of dangerous. Like, I don't know whether you want to like flip me the bird, shoot me in the head. And you don't let the people behind us, like you impede the entire flow of traffic when you do that. Nobody can get by. It's like really, there's a million reasons why it shouldn't happen. It's one of my biggest pet peeves. And I found it funny that my pet peeve was happening while someone on the radio was talking about a pet peeve. And then I wanted to find out from you two, is that also a pet peeve of yours?
Sort of. First of all, the fact that it happens to you regularly and it's not a car in front of you in the passing lane and it's a car next to me tells me that people get a look at you because you're gorgeous and they don't want to give that up. So this is not a problem I usually deal with on a regular basis. but it does bug me when I'm traveling on the highway like 84 and I'm in the passing lane behind somebody who's not passing. That doesn't take too long to get on my nerves.
Okay. Yes, I can definitely see that one. The person that's in the passing lane that's just not going quite fast enough happens quite often on Route 9. But Jonna, I have one issue though with your take on the pet peeve happening while he was talking about a pet peeve. Your pet peeve is genuine, okay? Because mm-hmm. a pet peeve needs to be something that happens on a regular basis and thus starts to annoy you on a regular basis. That's basically what a pet peeve is.
Well,
so no, how is it a pet peeve that Jeff Lewis is handing $50 to a lounge singer to sing a Taylor Swift tune and then she takes a 35-minute break? How often does that happen to Jeff Lewis where he finally says, this is starting to annoy me. It has now reached the rank of pet peeve.
Frankie Berry, it's like the ironic song.
Do you mean the one that isn't ironic?
Frankie Berry refuses to believe that the meaning of the word irony is what it is. But let me back you up for a minute, because speaking of meanings, I think you are not correctly defining the term pet peeve.
And why is that?
Okay. So you think a pet peeve is something that happens regularly that gets under your skin?
I agree.
Okay.
I concur.
You agree.
She concurs, Jonathan.
She concurs.
That. Yes.
I think that a pet peeve is something relatively minor that gets under your skin in a large way. It doesn't have to happen regularly. It just needs to be small, but it gives you a lot of irritation.
So that is that the dictionary according to Jonna?
Yes, indeed. So if by my definition, then Jeff Lewis's pet peeve is indeed a pet peeve, we should probably, not this minute, we should consult with the Google about this.
Because I'm looking right now.
Really do think that. Okay, right now. And what does it say?
I don't like it.
Yeah, because I won. I knew I won.
All right, so first one I'm
playing today.
First, what I'm finding is exactly what you said. You were right. Something that a particular person finds especially annoying.
Thank you.
Okay, let me keep going. Right. I'm going to find something that proves you wrong.
Something that they find especially annoying just once?
Oh, hang on. I found another one. A frequent subject of complaint. So I guess we're all right.
Ooh. All right.
So we'll have to share the accolades of being correct there, Spielberg.
Oh, you want to crack up, guys? So I'm on the Merriam-Webster page. So the definition says a frequent subject of complaint and the example of pet peeve in a sentence. Are you ready?
Yes.
Ready? Yeah. One of my biggest pet peeves is people driving too slowly on the highway.
Uh-huh. Wow. Well, isn't that ironic? Or is it, Frankenberry?
That's coincidental.
That's right. Is it irony or coincidence? But yes, I do. I have my own driving pet peeve, and that's that person who, for some reason, at the last minute, decides to pull in front of you and then do like 10 miles an hour.
Yeah.
That happens to me so often that I'll scream. I'll sit in my car and I'll scream, "Is my car invisible?"
Yes, exactly.
Like
even worse so when there's no cars behind you for miles.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And
then
when that car happens to be like either a mail truck or a dump truck or a big truck that you know is just going to take a half a freaking hour to get up to the speed limit because that's how they go, you're like, oh, why is God punishing me? Or is that just me? Oh, no. So terrible. Well, so what is, okay, other than the driving thing, do you guys have like a go-to pet peeve, like something that happens that you could just be like, oh, kill me now?
Yeah, the not passing in the passing lane. And I'm always like, I'm not really aggressive. Like I'll sit there for a little bit and not be too close because I'll give you a chance. but then I might inch up a little bit to send my message. I'm trying to think. Any other pet peeves?
The yo-yo. That's our pet peeve. The yo-yo.
A waiter taking my drink and give me a new one before the old one's completely done. Yeah.
Yeah.
And regular occurrence. kind of.
I do actually have one. And it happens at the grocery store. There's actually two of them when it comes to the grocery store. And this did not happen as much during the pandemic, but there is always that one person that stands way too close to you when you're standing in line. But then also when you do finally get up to the register, and I don't always have a lot of stuff. I'm a single dude, so I'm not buying a lot of things. I might have a couple of 12 packs of seltzer water, a little bit of cat food. That's it. And I'll have it way at the front of the register. And then the person behind me feels the need to grab one of those register conveyor belt dividers and place it in front of their stuff with about 5 feet between their stuff and mine. And I just want to look at them and go, did you really need the divider? Do you think?
Frankenberry, we need to analyze this because now that is a weird, like what triggers you? And I hate that word trigger. What about that irritates you?
Because the divider's not necessary. They left a 5 foot gap between his stuff and their stuff.
There's plenty of room between my stuff and their stuff. It's not necessary. It's like this. It's almost like this Pavlovian thing that people have where they have to grab the conveyor belt divider and put it down to separate their things from yours.
So do you get offended that God forbid your stuff touches, your macaroni and cheese touches their Diet Coke?
I get annoyed by the fact that you didn't need to do that. Why did you do that?
But it's not for your benefit. It's for the benefit of the busy cashier who may accidentally not know when to stop ringing crap up. And then you end up with the range-free $7.99 carton of eggs. You don't want that. She's doing it for your
range-free. Yeah, see, you can't even act like you go grocery shopping.
Oh, man, Joe, why you got a bus?
Range-free eggs. Your mother's listening right now, cringing, shaking her head. So embarrassed. Your mother knows.
Oh, God. My eggs on the moon. That's where I get my eggs from. Moon eggs.
You get a lot of things from the moon, Jonna.
It's cage free or free range. You're like making a better fur out of them.
But back right. to the original point, those barriers are necessary.
No, Frankenberry.
Don't get offended by the barrier. Jonah,
they're not necessary. And it has nothing to do with a busy cashier. There's no way in the world that any one of their items is just going to accidentally stand up, walk across the freaking conveyor belt, and step into my pile of stuff next to my 212 packs of seltzer water and accidentally get rung up.
Can I make a suggestion? And if I make the suggestion and you actually do it, I will pay you $100 if you also videotape it with your phone. Are you game? Are you down for this, what I'm about to tell you, Frankenberry?
What are you about to ask me, Jonna, if I am actually going to physically pick up that divider, put it back, and video it to see what the look is on their face when I do so?
Yes! Will you do that, Frankenberry?
Frankenberry, do it and just save it for Christmas, all right? Okay. And you're done with one gift.
There you go. I know you guys are always doing some early Christmas shopping. Well, that's a good idea there, Carol.
Come on. I just want to see the look on the person's face when they put it down and then you turn back, you look the person in the eye, you smile, you pick it up, you go with it, and then you put it back in the little crevice that it goes in.
Hold the divider like my index finger.
I have another backup plan, Frankenberry. It'd be just as funny. You pick up your two or three items and put them right up against the divider, and then the whole thing shifts all the way forward.
That's right. Oh, you put the divider down. I don't need to have my stuff all the way next to the cashier. I'm just going to slide it all back.
Yep. Do it.
Or what you could do is when you sidle up to the conveyor belt, right, with your arms full of stuff, and you put it down and you notice that there are some dividers waiting to be used, you pick them up and you like put them in your back.
Just hold them under your arm. Yeah, hold them hostage.
So no one can do it. And then when after your stuff is rung up, you hand them back to the cashier and go, oh, sorry, I forgot these. And you walk out.
Yes. I'm liking it.
Oh my God. Oh. See? These great ideas. And I don't even go to the grocery store.
And you know what, Jonna and Carol, I guarantee you it's things just like this, these little pet peeves that might just cause people to get divorced.
Drop the mic.
Oh my God. Is going down in history. How long have we been together? This band has been together for like
almost
11
years. Almost
500 years. This is the first time Frankenberry has volunteered as Sagoo.
Well done.
Hey, thank you very much. I will admit this was an easy one for the topic, but yes, I thought perfect timing.
Well, I know I was reaching for something and nothing was coming. So well played, my friend.
Hey, thanks, man.
Well, you kind of shot yourself in the foot because now I'm so like verklempt and my adrenaline's running. I'm all crazy. I can barely even remember who our guest is, but I got it.
Just look through your good eye and read off.
Exactly.
Wait, let me limp over to my computer.
And do a little squinting with the right eye.
Oh, God, you guys are too much fun. Okay, I need to really give credit to this Sagoo because what Frankenberry has just done is teed up the fact that our guest today on Happy Hour, I'm calling him a unicorn, and I mean that in the kindest of ways. We are going to be talking with a divorce coach for men who happens to be a man. That is why he is a unicorn. Frank Ortega, he's a divorce recovery coach. He helps both men and women, but he is really targeted toward, you know, helping bros who are going through a divorce. And I believe he's going to tell us the story that he's also gone through divorce himself. And he's going to be a refreshing take on something that affects so many people. So when we come back from the break, we're going to be talking with Frank Ortega, the divorce recovery coach.
All right, that sounds good. We've got Frank Ortega on the way, so please stick around. You're listening to Happy Hour here with Jonna Spilbore and Carol Pesci. I'm Frankenberry, and we will be right back.
Sunday mornings with 92.9 WBPM means you'll laugh more and stress less. Now here's more Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol.
Hello and welcome back again to Happy Hour here with Jonna Spilbore and Carol Pesci. And it's segment number two. And as always, it's segment number two is where we get to the most interesting part of the show, except, of course, the part where, you know, Jonna has some sort of terminal illness. And we get to the interesting part where we get to talk to our guests. And today we have Coach Frank.
Yes, we do. And before we talk to Frank, I'm going to tell you, even though I had only one good eye, I was able to find Frank among a sea. You know what? This is what I love about the universe. Like every once in a while, the universe just like drops somebody completely interesting in my lap, and I get lucky enough to reach out, and that person reaches back. And that is how I found today's guest, who I am lovingly referring to as a unicorn, because we're going to be talking to Frank Ortega. He is a divorce recovery coach who specializes in helping both men and women get their happiness back post-divorce. He teaches his clients that life happens on its terms, but life can be always experienced on their terms. And what makes Coach Frank unique is that he does have a very large male clientele. And you guys know, as somebody who handles divorces for a living, it's not, you know, the clients who need the coach, or the clients who seek out the coaching, I should say, not the clients who need it, the clients who seek it out tend to be more women. But here's Frank. He's, you know, drudged up a whole lot of dudes who are grateful for the help. So Coach Frank Ortega, welcome to Happy Hour.
Hey, I'm so glad to be here. That was incredible. Thank you so much for that. I feel honored, humbled, and grateful at the same time.
Well, we appreciate that. And I will, full disclosure, so you're talking with Frank and Barry, Carol and I are all experienced in divorce, and not just me professionally, but we've all gone through divorce. And Frank and Barry is a dude's dude. And I have to tell you, one of the reasons why I just found you so interesting is that never in a million years would I think that there is a market of guys who want to get through the divorce process in a positive, happy, less anxiety filled way. But apparently there is. And I guess your whole coaching platform started with you. So tell us a little bit about you, Frank.
And I have a question for you here in a little bit also in regards to what you just said, okay? Because I want to dig into that a little bit if possible. So a little bit about me. I obviously went through a divorce back in 2019. Probably the worst experience that I've been through. And it led me to a very, very deep suicidal place.
It was
extremely scary. I've never been like that before. I've always been a happy guy. I've always been the life of the party, all those things, right? But as a man, normally what ends up happening is you feel like you lay your life down for this person, for this human, for your family, right? And I was running a business of something that I did not love, but you will compromise and sacrifice your own fulfillment to fulfill somebody else most of the time. And that's for both men and women, right? And so whenever I lost my family, there was no more fulfillment. And then I lost the business because I was suicidal and I was depressed and I was in this dark place. And I got up to like 245 pounds, which at 5'9", you could see it kind of adds up a little bit, right? And so then I just started, going through the healing process because I didn't want to stay there. And my identity started to kick in, and everything that I teach really revolves around identity. But my identity started to kick in, and you know, I'm a Christian. And so my relationship with the Lord was something that really, really started, bringing me out of that. And then I started utilizing what's spiritual, but making it very practical. And then I reached out for some help. And then I started listening to all these coaches, and what they were saying lined up to what I was reading in my Bible, but they were giving me a practical way to do it. And then my life turned around very rapidly. And then I started doing some more research, and I learned that men who've gone through divorce are 6 times more likely to commit suicide anybody else. Exactly. That was my reaction. And then I learned that 80% of divorces are initiated by women. And so I was like, man, there is something terribly off here. And I need to know what's going on. Why did I have such a traumatic failure? And why are men having these, why are women leaving essentially, right? And why are men taking their own life, unfortunately? And so I felt like there was a need. If I'm being honest, I never thought about coaching. I just thought about helping people. I've always been into ministry. So I was just helping people, talking to people. And then a buddy told me, hey, have you ever thought about coaching? And I said, no. And he was like, well, you should do it. And I was like, well, what do I need? He was like, you just need to start. You have water and there's people that are thirsty. So give them water.
And, what a great way to put it.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't overthink it at all. I posted 3 TikToks and it filled my calendar for the next 2 weeks. And that's when I knew, hey, there's men out here. Cause I started with only men. Now I coach men and women. So that's a little bit about me and how I started.
You know, I want to go back to something Jonna said, and actually I want to correct something you said, Jonna, and I think you're going to agree with my correction. You said something to the effect of that you didn't think men or dudes would want to know how to get through divorce in a happy and productive way. I do think that that's what they all want, but I think that they tend not to reach out for help. I think there's a stigma more so with men about asking for help or needing help, number one. Number two, I think there are less resources for men than there are for women.
Yes. Yes. So I,
John, do you agree with my correction?
Yeah, I do agree with your correction.
Yeah.
They want it. They just don't. Sometimes I think they don't know that they want it. But yeah, you're right. They want it. Who wouldn't want it?
Right. Well, to get through. And
And Coach Frank, let me ask you one other question on this same topic, because this was something that was brought up before we got into the second segment between John and Carol and I. How much of this also is, what's the word I'm looking for? The way other people perceive of men and automatically just saying, well, a guy's not going to want this help, you know, and it kind of boxes a guy in. And that could be one of the reasons why they don't ask, because everybody just thinks they don't need it or they won't want it.
Yeah, yes, exactly. So that's the biggest thing that I come across. And if I'm being honest, that's why I have so many men that have reached out to me. And it's because I'm not afraid to speak vulnerably. I don't have that alpha male voice, right? Because alpha male, that's taken so out of context nowadays. Like, you got to be this massive tough dude, when the reality is real men cry.
Yep.
Real men cry because they're a human. Yeah. They experience an emotion. And so real men aren't afraid to experience an emotion. The men that are weak are the ones that don't want to experience an emotion. And then they become a ticking time bomb and they're triggered so easily and they pop off on women and friends, right? And so I think as soon as I started using my voice as a genuine, authentic man who's saying, hey man, this sucks and I know exactly where you're at, men were like, oh my word, I'm allowed to talk this way. I'm allowed to express myself this way, right? Because as men, we're created to lead, right? Now, I don't mean that in a sexist way. I don't want anyone to take it in that direction. But what I am saying is, this is what I teach my men. If you want a woman to open up to you, you open up to her. Because when you open up to somebody and you express that vulnerability, you are showing them, hey, this type of communication is okay with me. I want that. This is a safe place. And so that's really what I did with men through my content. And I believe that that is why they started coming. And yes, I hear that all the time is, you know, society, society, society. And I tell my men, hey, screw society, make your own society. What kind of people are you surrounding yourself with? What environment are you creating? If these people think that you're weak because you're expressing an emotion, there's no reason for you to be in relationship with them. Attract the people that you want in your life so that you can live the life that you want to live. Does that make sense?
Yes.
That makes total sense to me. And I have to get this question out because it's running through my mind as you're saying precisely what you just said. And that is, in my professional life where I deal with men who are in divorce, whether they're my client or they're somebody else's client and I have the other spouse, but particularly when they're my client, I have, and this is a God's honest truth, Frank. The men don't come to me and spill their hearts out about how sad they are about the breakup. The first and foremost thing that I think their concern is about, like, the money. the money and the stuff, like that seems to override everything else. And I don't know if that's a mask for their feelings or if that I just have clients who don't have any feelings. I'm saying that trying to be funny, but I guess, how do you pull out of the men what it is that is really bothering them about the breakup process? Like, how do you do that?
Yeah. So I have to kind of mind ninja them a little bit. Men are a lot harder sometimes. like with the ladies, man, I'll ask a question and they give it all to me and I can start working immediately. Right. But with the men, I really have to figure out what's going on. And as men, most men, not all men, most men are wired to pursue significance. That's why men crave respect. Right. And so when you lose your family, you're losing part of your significance now. Right. You see what I'm saying? So now what do they have to hold on to create significance in their life? More than likely the business, more than likely the money. You see where I'm going with this? So then now I can identify that there's actually a deeper need. You want to feel significant. So, bro, it's not about the money. It's that you're lacking significance in your life. So let's figure out why you're lacking significance in your life. And let's figure out a way to produce it in a positive way where you're not a jerk, but at the same time, you're not, just kind of doing whatever it takes to create that and create it in a negative aspect. Does that make sense?
Frank, you're giving me goosebumps.
Yeah, it truly does.
It's brilliant.
Yeah, that could be the key to the kingdom. Because sometimes it's hard to get through to anybody going through divorce. It's always a compilation of the personal emotion and the fear of, where am I going to live? What kind of, am I going to lose all my money? Like there's the fear and the emotion kind of swirl up and can make people nuts, for lack of a better word. And I don't even mean that disrespectfully. Like they don't think straight. They don't do things the way they did before their marriage was ending or crumbling. So this is amazing to me. So how do you, but I'm still a little bit, I have trepidation. When you reach out, like your coach, Frank, this is what you do. Mm-hmm. Men just like, are they contacting you secretly? Like, I don't really know if I belong here, but can you help me? Or they're coming, like, I just don't get how you entice them to get the help that is truly going to help them.
It's kind of a weird dynamic. I'll be honest. So my content really does all the work for me, which I'm very blessed to say that. And so I just have people that schedule consultations with me. And then once they're on that consultation, then we begin to chat. And every single person that I've talked to, like every single person says, I felt like you knew exactly where I was. And so I related with them through my content. Right. And so I think that made them feel like, if you know where I'm at, you can get me out of it. You see what I'm saying? And so I think that's what really makes them reach out. And it's creating that safe space. Like they're seeing a man talk in this fashion. So they must feel like I can talk to him this way. And I'm creating that in them. Does that make sense?
Yep.
Yeah. And I noticed from your podcast, like there was one in particular that stood out because I've seen this in my practice a lot. And it must be the type of thing where you guys can get together and be like, holy crap, this happened to me too. And it was the episode that you had with your buddy who was basically falsely accused of abusing his son, and Child Protective Services gets involved. And I have seen this movie so many times, and oftentimes Child Protective Services, they're not called because of a genuine reason. They're called because you can get away with using that as a way to hurt somebody without any substantiation whatsoever. And it's part of the process. It's baked in the cake, and it happened. It is awful, and it can ruin lives. But when I was listening to that episode of your podcast, like, this guy's not alone. I've seen it in my practice. He had people, I think, in your group who were like, yeah, it happened to me too. Like, it's crazy. So there is sort of this safety in numbers sort of mentality, I think, that I just am. I'm astonished that you're able to get through to men, because I've been doing this for a long time and I've been trying real hard. It doesn't always happen easily.
And I will say this is that is very true. Like going almost using that to circle back to the resources for men. There's not a lot of resources for men, but the ones that are, I don't want to say they're toxic because they do toxic things, but it's just hurt men that are creating them. And they're using it. Like, there's so many single dad groups. I mean, it is just the worst filth that you could ever imagine in your entire life, that they're just posting constantly about their baby mama and their ex-wife and all of this stuff. And I just remember talking to my buddy, and I was like, man, I want to do something different. Like, I want men that want to navigate this process and come out on top, not on bottom, to come out as an example so their kids can see them and say, man, I saw my dad go through hell and I saw him come out better, right? And I saw him experience so much pain and he didn't get bitter. Like, he actually grew in love. He grew in grace. He grew in compassion, and he learned more about himself, and he became more vulnerable because of the pain. And so when we started doing this, that's always been the entire goal. And it's incredible to see what God's doing and that actually becoming a fulfillment.
You know, it's amazing because I wholeheartedly agree with you, and I have for a long time, that divorce doesn't have to wreck you. You know, people feel like they're being wrecked. People feel like their lives are never going to get back on track. But I have this saying myself that says divorce may mark the end of your marriage, but it's also the beginning of the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. And when you talk to kids who whose parents divorced, I've talked to several of them over the course of my career, and most of them have said to me, I was so happy when my parents finally got divorced because it was miserable when they were married, and divorce was like the best thing that could have happened to us. And a lot of people avoid divorce, or they'll stay unhappy or miserable, or use the kids as a pawn because they think that somehow they're doing their children a favor by loving them more. And they just go about it the entirely wrong way. And if you do it right, everybody is better off. You, the kids, everyone.
And, you know, doing it right is the point. And we've talked about this. I've written about this in my own books. We've talked about this on the show multiple times. Life is going to deal us some crap. Mm-hmm. Life is going to deal us some stuff we don't ask for. We don't deserve. It's tough. It feels unfair. And we don't always have a choice about what it is we're going through or whatever it is that's happening. But we always get to choose who we are in relationship to it. And if you want a guiding light when you're going through something difficult, is to keep thinking about who you want to be and make choices in such a way that when it's behind you, you're proud of who you were and how you handled it.
Yes, exactly.
And that's what you're helping people do, Frank.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's really my passion. That's why one of my favorite quotes that, and I, not to sound weird, but that I say is that life happens on its terms, but it's experienced on our terms. Because it's so true. I had two clients, pretty identical situations, and they found out the same information about 2 weeks difference in time. Both found out that their husbands were cheating on them throughout the relationship, right? And then they found out after the divorce happened. And one of them felt incredible relief. The other one felt completely distraught. What's the difference? The situation is the exact same. So why is the experience different? It is because of the lens that you choose to see the situation through. The situation only has the power that you give it. And so if you see it as woe is me, as if you see it as life is just not fair, then you're going to get a crappy experience, which is going to give you a crappy result.
Yes.
But if you see it as life is happening for me, right? I'm glad that I'm getting divorced and I'm glad that I found that out because that helps me close the chapter and release it. Now you have a different experience. So you have a different result and you have a different outcome.
And you know, it's hard sometimes because you're so, and look, all of us here talking today have been through it, and it's overwhelming at the time, and it just consumes you. But to have that little bit of faith that it will somehow serve you, and not that it will, but you actively choose to make it serve you in the future. I'm an example of that. I would never have become an author had I not gone through what I went through and then what I learned about how I chose to respond to it. And you too, Frank, it was awful. You were to the point of suicide and how you chose to respond to it, how you chose to look at it, who you chose to be in relationship to it, And now you're changing and helping lives, and you're better at it because of what you went through.
Exactly. It's like, and it gets me a little emotional, so you're going to have to forgive me, but
I get it.
I see me yeah. when I'm on these calls, and that is the driving force that moves me. Because I see exactly where I was. And so my goal is not to make people feel better. I'm not into that. I want to make people unbreakable. That's my goal in life. But in order to make them unbreakable, I have to make them feel better in an instance. And so that has literally driven me to where, I mean, I work so much, but it doesn't feel like I'm working, because I need to develop more skills to make people feel incredible immediately. And then we can do the work, because when you're in a powerful emotional state, you can do incredible things. You think more clear. You think about better solutions. You get more creative. You naturally see the light at the end of the tunnel. Yep. And it's all, so I have to get them to that emotional state, and I've learned how to do it now. And so I think that's why I have so many clients that have struggled for years. And then I have so many clients that they've probably been going through it for, you know, 60, 90 days. And they get insane breakthrough in 30 days. Like I'm talking about like completely over it in 30 days. And a lot of people don't believe me when I say that, but then they listen to the testimonials that are on my Instagram, and it's real people that are saying, yeah, I thought you were full of it. And now look at where I'm at. Like, this is insane.
Because you gave them a new lens. And one of Jonna's all-time favorite quotes from Wayne Dyer is, when you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. And and you can apply this to any challenge in life.
Yes.
Anything.
Yes, exactly. And you know, I'm a faith-based guy. And so it's all faith, all of it. The way you choose to look at something is, I am going to choose to believe that this is working out for my good. Yeah. I am directing my thoughts purposefully. And so as soon as you focus on that, your mind and your body, they don't know what's real and what's not real. That's why the placebo effect works, right? Mm-hmm. And what you entertain in your head long enough, you will begin to experience. And so I use their focus. Every single time they message me, right? My one-on-one clients, they send me a voice memo, coach, I'm struggling with this, is it. All I do is ask them, what are you focusing on right now? What are you focusing on right now?
Yep.
And so now one of my clients showed up at a support group last night, and I'm filming with him tomorrow in his testimonial, but this guy gets himself out of it immediately. Now he was going into a meeting with, you know, Child Protective Services, because he was falsely accused as well. And I've been working with him through that. And he was about to go in, and he knows that every time he goes in there, they're just trying to attack him and make him lose his cool. And he was already stressed and scared about what could possibly go wrong. And I taught him how to immediately get himself out of them by his choosing what he was going to focus on. And he did it. And I mean, last night he was ecstatic. He was like, the meeting went incredible. I stood my ground, but I wasn't aggressive because I felt comfortable. I felt secure. And he was like, and it wouldn't have been except for the simple fact that you taught me that one practice. And that's what I love. I love giving people tools, drills, shovels, hammers, right? All these things. And then go build the house that you want to build. Build the life that you want to design the way that you want to do it.
And it's absolutely possible.
When is your book coming out, Frank?
Yeah.
I don't know. I've been asking that quite a bit. I'm not much of a writer. I am a writer as in journals, right? And for myself. And so I've been thinking about it. I'm entertaining a couple of titles right now. And so it's going to be a very fun project that hopefully here within the next 2 years.
That'd be awesome. Well, we'll have you back on again.
Yeah, I would love to. You guys have been incredible.
This has been great. And there's so much more that we can talk about, because hurt people. And if you can get past the hurt, whether someone's attacking you or you're doing the attacking, I think life can really open up. So I encourage both men and women, even though you kind of focus initially on men, you do coach both sexes. So you're an equal opportunity divorce coach, which, and I highly recommend, because look, I handle the legal stuff, and I think a lot of clients in that situation would benefit from this kind of, it's not therapy, it's coaching. I mean, you help people figure it out. So if people want to connect with you, Frank, and I love your Instagram, so people should go there immediately so that they can get little bite-sized pieces of what you do. How do they find you? What's your Instagram account? What's your website, et cetera?
Yeah, so my Instagram account is Divorce Recovery Coach. And so you can find me there. The best way to get in contact with me is through the link in my bio, schedule a consultation. That's how you can for sure know that I'm going to respond. I like to be active in my DMs, but I got to be honest, they get pretty full sometimes. And so they get lost in the request side of things. And so the best way to contact me is through Instagram. You go to the link in my bio and you schedule a consultation. I used to use a website, not really much of a website kind of guy. I think everything happens through social right now. And that's what I choose to believe. And that's what I choose to invest in right now. Right. So that is the absolute best way to reach me.
And people can get a lot of free content if they go to your Instagram. So, Coach Frank Ortega, thank you so much for joining
us.
Thank you. Yeah, we really appreciate it.
Of course, it was an honor being here with you guys. Thank you so much for reaching out. I'm glad we were able to do this, and hopefully I was able to bless your life in some way.
Well, Coach Frank, we appreciate you joining us today, and thank you so much for the help that I'm sure you provided for some of our listeners out there. Now, listen, we are not done yet, so we've got more help to provide for you in segment number three. I'm just kidding. But segment number three is on the way with Jonas Spielborg and Carol Pesci. So please stick with us. And again, Coach Frank, thanks for the time.
Live better, laugh harder, love more. This is Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol on 92.9 WBPM.
And welcome back one more time to Happy Hour here this morning with Jonna Spielborg and Carol Pesci. Hello, ladies.
Hello,
Frankenberry. Frankenberry.
Frankenberry.
Yeah, boom, chicka, boom to you too as well.
So Frank was awesome. What, just a sincere guy. He's really got a good thing that he's doing for people, and the ripple effect could be infinite. Yeah, really, really good stuff.
I always appreciate people who walk the walk. Like, you know, he identified a problem and a place in the market because he went through it himself. And that always gives you a special little je ne sais quoi. That's French.
French.
That's right, because I've always thought that French rhymed with ranch. Yes.
Listen, you guys, it's hard to talk with this eye patch on my eye.
Oh, yes. I felt the same way, that it was hard for me to see things while I was wearing a mask during the pandemic. So I'm with you there, Spielborg. You're okay.
It's hard to talk with a thong over my eyeball. I'm not really wearing a patch. I know.
Okay. And again, as I mentioned earlier, as we hark back to my college days, we're going to close shop here. And we're going to let Jonna continue to have that eye patch thong on her head. Carol Pesci, thanks for being the sane one. And we will be back again next week with more from Happy Hour and Jonna Spielborg and Carol Pesci and myself. I'm Frankenberry. And again, to Frank Ortega, thank you so much for joining us this morning, Coach. And we'll be back next week and we'll talk to you then. Until then, have a good week and make it a safe one.
You've been listening to Happy Hour with Jonna Spielborg and Carol Pesci. If you missed last weekend's show or want to hear it again, visit the Happy Hour page at 92.9WBPM.com. There's more life advice, real conversation, and another awesome interview next Sunday morning at 8 a.m. Live better, stress less, and laugh more with Happy Hour on 92.9 WBPM.